everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on drought in America when we come back. You know, in 1970, the world food supply was 73 days for every man, woman, and child on planet Earth. Today, it's down to less than 38 days. Now, these global 2000 mad scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians, as I call them, plan to use famine, disease, plague, and pestilence to reduce the Earth's population by 90% over the next 50 years under the Club of Rome plan. It's called Global 2000. In Revelation chapter 6, the God of Israel told us exactly the same thing in essentially the same words, using false prophets, war, famine, and disease. Now, back in the 1920s, about 50% of our people lived on the land as subsistence farmers, producing their own food and food for the rest of the world and for you and me. Today, we Americans have chosen to live in our cities, and now only 3% of us live on the land. Now, that means 97% of us then are no longer self-sufficient in our food production. Now, we Americans produce grain for export, all right, but then we turn around and import grapes from Chile, tomatoes from Mexico, and berries from Guatemala. Our food supply is in the hands of foreigners and multinational corporations who support the Global 2000 World Population Control Program. These globalists, with the genocide agenda, have a cause that they're willing to die for, and I say let them die for their cause, and let you and I live for ours. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package? That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free, and you can call right now the number 417-273-4967. Now, our subsistence and survival school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send an email request for your free General Law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about drought. I pointed out the Anasazi Indians last time down in southwestern United States were driven out because of drought. And they were driven out just before the Spanish came in. Now, isn't that just coincidental? And the Spanish took over the entire southern half of the Americas. They took over Mexico on south to South America. In fact, they had a big stronghold here in North America at one time, and then the Anglo-Saxons came in and drove them out. The Protestants drove the Catholics out. That's why you have Catholics south of the Rio Grande, and you have the Protestants north of the Rio Grande. But the point I'm making is that we took over from the people who were here, and drought played an important part in the destruction of their civilization. Drought has played an important part in the destruction of civilizations for thousands of years. Most people see drought as being a common meteorological phenomenon. It occurs every so often, and you just have to put up with it. It's kind of like floods and drought and the rainy season in wintertime, you know, when there's snow. Now, the Bible tells us a different story concerning drought. In fact, in two chapters, God said, I will give you rain in due season. I pointed out to you that rain in due season covers drought, hurricanes and floods, and normal rainfall. And then he did it all in one fell swoop. You see, if you've got normal rainfall, That is rain in due season, then you don't have too much or too little. You've got the right amount. And the right amount for your area is an important factor in being able to produce. For instance, if you had rain in the Central Valley of California like you do in Georgia, Alabama, and Mississippi, you would not be able to grow the kinds of crops and in the volumes that are grown in those valleys from irrigation. It's not an accident that the weather in California is the way it is. California is probably the most important agricultural piece of real estate on planet Earth. In fact, at one time they produced more in California. More. 57% of all the table vegetables in America came out of California in the 1950s. If there was a piece of real estate like California in most countries in the world, they'd put a fence around it and they'd make a national park out of it. That's how rich and abundant that piece of real estate is, the Central Valley of California. The weather there is very important to the growing of grapes and the wines that come out of California, which are world class. You can't grow those kinds of grapes, and you can't grow or produce that kind of wine in Mississippi. So weather and where that weather occurs is important. You can't grow soybeans the way you can in Mississippi, anywhere else. Soybeans grow in certain ground, and they grow in certain weather conditions, and that's why you have certain crops that are produced in various areas. The climate, the weather, makes bananas grow in Central America, and they don't do very well in North Dakota. So around the world, we have climate. And in those climates, we have rain. And when we have rain in abundance, we have floods. And floods are bad for all of us. When we have rain in dearth, or when we have a shortage, we call it a drought. So what is a drought anyway? Well, understanding and defining the term is kind of important. In law, we like to define our terms before we get out on the floor and start making our legal argument. So the concept of drought. Drought is a normal, recurrent feature of climate, although many erroneously consider it a rare and random event. It occurs in virtually all climate zones, but its characteristics vary significantly from one region to another. Drought is a temporary aberration. It differs from aridity, which is restricted to low rainfall regions and is of a permanent feature of climate. Drought is an insidious hazard of nature. I'm going to pause right here and underline that and ask the question, what is nature? Who or what is nature? Whatever this is, the author of this article says drought is an insidious hazard of nature. Well, I see nature as being God. The God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob is the one that comes right to my mind. The guy that brings drought and in the scripture describes civilizations that he has plagued with drought. Governments and civilizations that he's overthrown and destroyed with drought. That's the thought that comes to my mind. I suppose in the minds of evolutionists and various other religious ideologies, Mohammedans probably, or Muslims would probably think of Allah, and Buddhists would probably think of Buddha, and evolutionists would think of random chance, maybe a pair of dice. It just happens. But in the scripture, there's a fellow that calls himself God, and he says, you know, I make things and I destroy them. I bring up nations and empires, and then I knock them off their perch. And that's the way I see the United States of America right now. At the top of the heap, but on a slippery slope. And we've been sliding down this slippery slope for about 50 years. And I pointed out to you last time in Deuteronomy chapter 4, God said, you will not prolong your days upon the land if you don't practice my law. If you don't fulfill your half of the contract, the deal that we made out at Mount Sinai, Now, the deal that was made at Mount Sinai was this. God said, I'm going to give you these 33 benefits, and he articulated 33 benefits. One of the benefits is rain in due season. These benefits, by the way, are recorded in Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. First 14 verses of those two chapters, if you want to see what the terms and conditions of your benefits are, it's like getting a job at ExxonMobil, and you want to know what the benefit package is. Do I get medical? Do I get hospitalization? Do I get paid vacation? Do I get free dental? Do I get any legal? You know, there are certain benefits that come along with the pay package. Well, the old covenant is the same thing that you've got here with ExxonMobil or your employer. You've got a benefit package. And in the benefit package, it spells out the terms and conditions of the contract. It says that we're going to give you these benefits, and we expect you to be here at 8 o'clock in the morning and punch in on the time clock. And we expect you to put in 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. We expect you to take rotating shifts, that is, swing shift for 6 weeks, and graveyard shift for 6 weeks, and day shift, you know, for 6 weeks, and so on. And as long as you maintain your half of the contract, then the company will maintain its half of the contract. But I want to point out that if you don't show up for work every day at 8 o'clock, or if you start taking days off, and you don't have a pretty good reason for that, And instead of taking 2 weeks paid vacation, you take 2 weeks paid and 2 weeks without pay, maybe 4 weeks a year, you're in breach of the contract and you're in danger of being fired. Now, that's just the terms and conditions of contracts. It's what we call contract law. And in every contract, there has to be a penal clause, because if you don't have a penal clause in the contract, well, then you don't have a contract. Well, I guess you could have a contract, but without a penal clause, how would you enforce it? It would be a group of suggestions. Now, one of the penalties that comes from the violation of the laws of God is drought. Drought. And we've had droughts, and droughts cost us a lot of money. And because we've had droughts in the past, droughts that didn't necessarily overthrow our government, didn't overthrow our civilization, didn't destroy us as a nation or a people, but it cost us a lot of money. And those are what we call wake-up calls. You know, if the boss calls you into the office and he says, listen, you've been late, you know, six times this month and 3 days this month you didn't show up for work, and I'm going to write this up in your personnel file, and if you don't straighten this out, we're going to terminate your employment. And maybe he might even give you a reprimand. Maybe there's some other kind of a penalty that the boss ascribes to you. And maybe he gives you this wake-up call two or three times. But there comes a point in time, my point is, a point in time when you're going to get canned, or there's going to be some kind of real nasty, bad consequences that come from your breach of contract. So drought then is a part and parcel of this breach of contract. Just wanted to bring that to your attention. So every time I see drought is an insidious hazard of nature, I like to ask the question, well, just who and what is this nature that you're talking about? Is it just random chance? It's just a couple of dice falling on the table and we don't know what number's coming up? Or is this nature some personal being out there that's got the power, that has the capacity to shut off your rain? Let me bring this to your attention. In Revelation chapter 11, there's a story in here about two witnesses. It's a short story. It'll take me about 2 minutes to tell it to you. In verse 3, it starts off. It says, I'll give power unto my two witnesses, and they shall prophesy 1,260 days clothed in sackcloth. Now, these are the two olive trees and the two candlesticks standing before the God of the earth. And if any man will hurt them, fire proceeds out of their mouth and devours their enemies. And if any man will hurt them, he must in this manner be killed. These have power to shut heaven, that it rain not in the days of their prophecy, and to have power over waters, to turn them to blood, and to smite the earth with all plagues as often as they will. Now, evidently, there's two guys coming here at some point in time that will have the power to shut the heaven that it rains not in the days of their prophecy. This prophecy, by the way, is described as being 1,260 days. Now, 1,260 days is about 3.5 years. Now, I don't know if when they shut up heaven, we're talking about no rain for 3.5 years. Now, can you picture this? I mean, can you imagine living in New York with no rain for 3.5 years, 1,260 days? How about California, Washington, Oregon? I mean, just picture that. Now, you know, most people, they will read something like that in the Bible, and they'll say, that's impossible, it's never happened, and it's never going to happen, and it's preposterous, and blah, 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 blah. You know, you go, well, okay. Noah's flood was impossible. It was a once-in-a-lifetime event, never before and never again. And God himself said, I'm not going to do that anymore, but I'm going to do it once. And he did. And the evidence is all around us. We can't see the evidence, but it's there, you know, right in front of you. And I'm sitting here saying, do you suppose that maybe 40% of our nation is under this curse, that God has just kind of given us a little wake-up call, called us into the office and said, listen, that Hurricane Katrina down there, that was a pretty heavy-duty hit. Now, we've been getting these hurricanes, and they're getting stronger, and they're getting more violent, and there's more of them, it seems like to me, every year. And in fact, I saw a story here not too long ago that over the last 20 years, hurricanes are becoming more frequent, and they're getting stronger. And, of course, the article says this is a cycle. You don't blame this on God now. There's nothing supernatural. This is just a cycle. It goes from time to time. Well, I'm not so sure. If it's a cycle, that's good for all of us. If it's God speaking over here, this isn't good for any of us. And I pointed that out to you this week, that I had to drill a new well. And it rains, and when it rains on the righteous and it rains on the wicked all at the same time. And when there's a drought, it's just as dry for me practicing the Ten Commandments as it is for some guy that isn't. So I got to tough it out. I've got to live through this drought. I'd just as soon not do it. I can think of a lot of other things that we could be doing and having a good time on a carnival cruise down in the Caribbean without a drought here. But, you know, if it happens, it happens. And you ought to be prepared for it. So there's another little thought. Who is this guy that we call nature? Nature in reality is God, but we don't want to use the name God because it's politically incorrect, and on top of that, it's embarrassing as hell, and we don't want to talk about him. But we don't have any other explanations for what's going on around us, and so we come up with a euphemism called nature. So I just thought I'd tell you, this nature that you're talking about over here is the God of creation. And the guy over here is telling you, he's sending you a message, and he says, you're in breach of contract, and I'm going to kick your hiney. Bottom line. Now, let me tell you another part of the story. I was watching 60 Minutes last night, and there was a governor up in Montana. And the governor of Montana, his name is Schweitzer. I've forgotten his first name, Bob or Joe or John or Bill. Doesn't make any difference. But anyway, he's just been in office for a year. And it happens that Montana has a lot of coal. There's an abundance of coal up there. And Schweitzer got to talking to some guys, and they talked to some other guys who talked to some other guys, and they got to thinking about the German war machine back in World War II. And the Germans were producing fuel. It's called coal gasification. They were producing aviation fuel and diesel fuel and gasoline out of coal. Now, coal is kind of a hard rock. For those of you that maybe have never seen coal, it's not very common in America today. Everybody heats with natural gas today, but when I was a kid, we heated with wood or coal. And this coal, you know, would come in a truck, and the guy would bring you about a ton or 2 tons, and he'd drop it down your coal chute into your basement. And you had this auger, and it's pretty dirty stuff. It's black and dusty, and it gets dust all over, and when it burns, it's got coal smoking. It's about as popular as AIDS at an office Christmas party. And nobody wants it. Nobody likes it. And coal miners get killed digging it out of the ground, but they use it for generating electricity and 55 other industrial uses. And it's a black rock, and it's very flammable. And there's a process. I mean, you can run this stuff through a process over here, and you can turn it into diesel fuel and just pump it right into the tank of your diesel truck and drive down the road with it. You can turn it into automobile fuel, kerosene. I mean, there's just a whole host and plethora of uses for it. Well, it's a pretty expensive fuel. And if you can poke a hole in the ground and you can get oil out of the ground under pressure for 50 years and get thousands of barrels of oil that are worth, you know, $60 a barrel, nobody wants to dink around with coal. But it just so happens that Montana's got an abundance of coal, and the governor up there got to thinking about this, and so they did some research, and they found out that at $30 a barrel for oil versus the coal, you can gasify this coal and you can be competitive. At $60, you can produce it for about $1 a gallon. And with 60 cent a gallon taxes on it, you can produce this stuff and then you can sell it competitively for the same $1.50 to $2 a gallon that we're paying now in the United States for fuel. And he said, let's get after it. Now, the reason I bring this to your attention, and while we're talking about drought, there are solutions that are available to all of us when big problems come up. For instance, we have a balance of payments deficit with the rest of the world that is threatening the destruction of our economy. There's a solution to that problem. It's called gold and silver coin. It's just weights and balances. It's the same solution that we used to use in this country from 1787 to about 1964. Just weights and balances. And when we did that, we didn't have hyperinflation. We didn't have a balance of payments problem. I mean, we had wealth and prosperity and everything went along fine. We got off of that and got onto fiat money, Federal Reserve notes, and we've had nothing but problems from that day forward. All right. So, moral to my story is there's a cause and effect relationship. There's a problem and there's a solution. It isn't a mystery. I mean, it isn't something that's just that's like an insoluble problem, like how it's 1850 and how do we fly to the moon? It's impossible because we don't know how to fly an airplane yet. But, you know, once we learned how to fly airplanes, it was just the next step, you know, and the next step and the next step, and somebody woke up one day and said, hey, I think we can make rockets and go out into space. And so now it's fairly common. Well, anyway, this guy Schweitzer over here, the governor, says, well, here's the solution. Let me tell you what the solution is. And a lady came on there, and she says, no, what we've got to have is biodiesel. I don't like the idea of digging coal up out of the ground and using coal to make diesel fuel and gasoline and aircraft fuel, because the mining companies leave big holes in the ground and they don't clean it up. So the governor says, well, why don't we pass a law and make them clean it up? And this lady said, well, they never cleaned it up in the past. What makes you think they're going to clean it up in the future? And so she came out and she said, well, what we need is biodiesel. See, what we'll do to solve the problem, we will plant corn here in Montana and grow corn. And with this corn that we're going to grow in Montana, we'll convert that into biodiesel and we'll use that. Now, I want to point out to you boys and girls that Montana is in the throes of this drought. Probably the worst drought in the history of the United States is going on around you right now, today, in 2006. And this lady says, well, what we'll do is we'll grow corn. that's fine. If you've got rain in due season, you can grow lots of corn. No doubt about it. Furthermore, if you've got lots of snowpack, you can irrigate that corn. And that's a good idea. But right now, you've got people in Montana that are not growing because there's not enough rain there. Now somebody's going to say, well, droughts are cyclical and, you know, it'll pass and then we can go on to growing biodiesel. And the governor came up and he said, well, if you do the arithmetic, And if you took every acre of ground in Montana, and you took every acre of ground and you planted it to corn and you converted it to biodiesel, it would furnish 15% of the national need for diesel. Wouldn't produce any aircraft fuel, wouldn't produce any gasoline, but it would produce 15% of the nation's diesel fuel, which, by the way, is a minor fuel. We use a lot of gasoline, but we don't use a lot of diesel, but it would produce 15% of our diesel. All right, now, he said, do the arithmetic. We can gasify this coal, and we in Montana can produce all of the deficiency that we're now importing from overseas. If you take all the oil that we're importing from overseas into the United States, just the people in Montana have enough coal up there, they can dig it up, put in plants, and we can make America energy independent. But you can only produce 15%. If you took every acre in Montana, you could only produce 15% of just one of three fuels, diesel. That doesn't include gasoline or kerosene for aircraft. Now, you know, this governor up there in Montana's got his head screwed on straight, and my point is, Americans don't seem to be able to solve their problems anymore. Have you noticed that? I don't care what the problem is, it's insoluble. We've got a balance of payments problem, we can't solve it. We've got an immigration problem, we can't solve it. We've got a fiscal, federal budgetary fiscal problem, and we can't solve it. We can't balance our budget. The states can't balance their budget. The school boards can't balance their budgets. We have polluted air, and we can't solve that problem. We've got a drought, and we can't solve that problem. There isn't any problems in America. Can you name one problem that's going on in America that we've solved or that we are in the process of solving? I know you're going to say, well, air pollution. You got a good point there. Air pollution today is much less than it was at any time in the past, going back to 1950. So we've made great progress in that regard, air pollution. Now, leave air pollution out. Name one problem that we've got in America that we've solved or that we're in the process of solving. Now, it isn't that we Americans can't solve problems or haven't. For instance, out in California, there's a dam called the Dvorak Dam. It's up in the Yosemite Park, Yosemite National Park. They built that dam back about 1911, 12, 15, before World War I, as an outgrowth of the San Francisco earthquake and fire back in 1906. That a big earthquake out in California, in San Francisco, burned the city down, or much of it. And so the city fathers and the people, the legislature of California, I guess they got together and they said, you know, we got a bad problem. We got a big city that's sitting over here on a rock, and we don't have enough water, and we got to solve the water problem. So they went over on the other side of the state. Now, California is about 150 miles wide, so they went over across the other side of the state, up into the Sierra Mountains, up about 7,000, 8,000 feet, and they built a big dam up there. And they took a valley, and they flooded this valley up there. And they made this Dvorak Dam. Now, here's the beauty of this engineering project. The water comes out of this dam, and it flows by gravity all the way to San Francisco, 136 miles away, with no pumps. Can you believe that? That's the damnest thing I ever heard of. Not a pump in the system. Not only does it supply the water for San Francisco, but a number of cities in between, like Tracy, California, and a number of others, I don't know how many, 10, 15 little towns. Probably 30, 50,000. I'll bet it supplies enough water for San Francisco, population 600,000, and probably another 600,000 people on the way over there. All gravity fed, no pumps. And do you know that there's a movement afoot to tear that dam down? Yeah, they want to tear the dam down and restore the valley to its natural beauty, which nobody alive today has ever seen. All they've got is some paintings of it. so that the environmentalists over there will have a valley that is so high, so remote, that the only way that you can get to it is to backpack into it. These same environmentalists want to tear down every dam on the Columbia River. Grand Coulee. You know that big dam down there, Grand Coulee Dam? They want to tear it down. So that it will make, it'll make fish habitat. And the fish won't have any obstacles going up the river. I want to point out that the Columbia River, with those dams and reservoirs, makes a seaport in Idaho. Now go get a map and take a look at it. Idaho, in Lewiston, Idaho, 600 miles from the ocean, 10,000-ton ships sail up the Columbia River from Astoria, Oregon, all the way to Lewiston, Idaho, load up grain, and go out into the world trade. And they want to tear that down. Not only are Americans talking about or are unable to solve their problems, they're talking about destroying the infrastructure that makes our civilization possible. Can you believe it? Let's take a little break here and we'll come back and we'll discuss what in the hell is going on in America that would cause people, sane, rational people, to come to the kind of erroneous conclusions that we have been making in this country for the last 50 years. Hang on. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school and is open to individuals, but by prearrangement only. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network, or of this local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about drought. What causes it? Where does it come from? And I pointed out to you that 10 states along the Missouri River, 7 states along the Colorado River, and 4 states, I guess it is, Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama, have just had devastating hurricanes and floods. That's an excess of water. And then we've got this drought going on in 19 other states. And that includes Oklahoma. Forgot Oklahoma there. North Texas and Oklahoma are suffering from drought, and South Texas, or East Texas, I guess I should say, was suffering from and is now recovering from Hurricane Rita. Boys and girls, that's not rain in due season, and 40% of our nation now is under this rain in due season curse, if that's the right term to put it, or the right way to put it. And we've been talking about this thing of drought and understanding and defining this thing of drought. And what is the role of God, the Creator, and what is our role? You see, we blame global warming on the activities of men. That is, we're burning a lot of fossil fuels, and because we're burning all of these fossil fuels, we're causing the Earth's temperature to rise. And you know, that may be true. That may be true. Well, God was pretty smart when he figured out years ago, you know, about 3,000 years ago, that the world would come to a climax that he described in Matthew chapter 24. When he said, just before I return, this is going to be the conditions on planet Earth. And the conditions that he described was excessive rain or floods in one area. He says, I'll make it to rain on one place and I'll withhold the rain on another. And he uses the personal pronoun I will do this, as if he's the guy that's going to do this, as opposed to you and me doing this to ourselves, which is another reason why I tend to believe that it may well be that the burning of fossil fuels is increasing the Earth's temperature. But the Earth's temperature has increased 1 degree over the last 100 years, and they tell us it's going to increase another degree over the next 100 years, which is going to inundate, it's going to melt the ice caps, and it's going to inundate all the low-lying areas around the world by about 3 feet of water. So if you want to know how much ice is in Greenland, the North Pole and the South Pole, that's 3 feet. Well, that's what the experts tell us. Now, we got a couple of guys coming on the scene here at some indefinite time in the future called the Two Witnesses of Revelation 11. And they're going to withhold rain. That's more drought. And evidently, this drought is going to be sporadic, and it's going to be worldwide, and it's going to affect everybody in the world, whether they like it or not. In fact, there are some droughts going on in other places in the world. I'm just zeroing in on the United States because that's my immediate concern, but there's drought in Kenya. There are droughts going on in other locations around the world. Is it El Nino? You know, sometimes people will say, well, it's the El Nino effect. Well, here's what El Nino is all about. In every 2 to 7 years, off the western coast of South America, ocean currents and winds shift, bringing warm water westward, displacing the nutrient-rich cold water that normally wells up from deep in the ocean. The invasion of warm water disrupts both the marine food chain and the economies of coastal communities that are based on fishing and related industries. Because the phenomenon peaks around the Christmas season, the fishermen who first observed it named it El Nino, the Christ Child. In recent decades, scientists have recognized that El Nino is linked with other shifts in global weather patterns. For a colorful look at El Nino with real-time graphics, check out NOAA's TAO project pages. Now, that's the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Agency's webpage. Now, there's a frequency to these El Niños. The return period of the El Nino event varies from 2 to 7 years. Hold it, boys and girls. Hold it, hold it. I'm going to underline that statement right there. It varies from 2 to 7 years. Well, then, doesn't that tell you that it's unpredictable? It would seem like to me that if we're in various cycles, now, I'm an old country boy, and I can tell you, after having lived here for 20 years, I can tell you what the normal rain cycle is here in Ozark County, Missouri. I can tell you with virtual certainty that September it's going to rain, and July and August it isn't. I can tell you with certainty that the wettest month of the year is in June, and the driest month of the year is in December. I mean, I can just observe it and tell you. Now, here comes a scientist along here, and he says, now, the return period of the El Nino event varies from 2 to 7 years. What if I said, well, gee, the rain in Ozark County, Missouri, varies from 2 to 7 months? Boys and girls, that's not a cycle, that's random chance. Now, when something occurs regularly, then that tells us that we're in a cycle. When something occurs 2 to 7, let's just divide 2 by 7, and that's a 28% divergence there. 2 is 28% of 7. Let's do it the other way. Let's take 7 and divide it by 2, and it comes out 350, 3.5. Now, that's not random chance, boys. I mean, that is random chance. You know, that's not a cycle. And so here's this scientist comes along over here, and he says, well, this El Niño event varies from 2 to 7 years. The intensity and duration of the event are also varied and hard to predict. Yeah, that's about the way I see it. It's kind of hard to predict when God is going to punish us. It goes on for a long time. It's kind of hard to predict when the next Hurricane Katrina is going to hit New Orleans. It's a little hard to figure out because, you know, unless you're talking to God on a regular basis, he's probably not sharing many of his secrets with you. I just want to point out that most people, if you bring up the subject like Marin Agin did, he said, I'm beginning to wonder if Hurricane Katrina wasn't punishment from God. And then he had to retract that statement. It's terribly politically incorrect here in the United States to use God in public or in politics. I think the mayor kind of hit the nail on the head. Now, here's this scientist. He says, now, typically it lasts anywhere from 14 to 22 months, but it can be much longer or shorter. Jesus. It can last from 14 to 22 months, but it can be longer or it can be shorter. Boy, that's about as random as you can get. Now, it's happened before, and it happens that it's going to happen, or we believe it's going to happen together. Did it ever occur to us that maybe God is doing this to us? Because this El Niño isn't something that's good. I can't think of anything good coming out of El Niño, can you? When these El Niño events occur, there's drought in Australia, and it's burning up. And there are floods in California, and it's washing away. That's not rain in due season for you Australians, and it's not rain in due season for the Californians. And it affects the weather pattern around the world. There are droughts in Africa and floods in Europe, for crying out loud. There was drought in Europe here a couple of years ago and floods in Africa. And that's precisely what God told us he was going to do to us in Matthew 24. He says, you know, I'm going to give you people weather upsets. I'm going to upset your weather patterns. And of course, the scientists, they're anti-God. They come along and they say, well, it's just cycles. It's just random chance. You know, we just can't tell. Boy, you can say that again. It's not a pattern. Now they're coming along here saying, well, you know, El Niño, that's the name. Hey, listen. Just because you can hang a label on something, you know, you go to the doctor and you're not feeling too good, and the doctor says, oh, God, I know what's wrong with you. You have cancer. And so then we're supposed to feel real good because there's a name for the malady that we're suffering from. Then you say to the doctor, well, doc, can you cure the cancer? Oh, no. Well, do you know what causes this cancer? No, we don't know what causes it. We don't know how to cure it. But we do have a treatment, and it costs $100,000 to treat you. Well, will this treatment cure me? No. But it'll extend your life for about 18 months. Now, that's what we're listening to here. Now, I mentioned this guy, the governor of Montana, Governor Schweitzer. He came up with a solution to the energy problem in America. It is never going to be put into operation. Let me assure you, boys and girls, if you believe for a minute that the United States of America is going to dig coal out of the ground in Montana, gasify the coal, and produce 100% of the petroleum products that we consume in the United States of America coming out of Montana, you've got your head right up the wrong end of your anatomy. If you believe that, I've got a bridge in New York to sell you. Now, I'm sure the governor is sincere, and I'm all for him, and I wish he could succeed. But boys and girls, if you were the chairman of the board at ExxonMobil, and you own the drilling rights and the production rights of most of the oil in the world, particularly in Saudi Arabia, where you got a 20% share in the Five Sisters, and you're pumping oil at 1,600 pounds pressure per square inch, and you poke a hole in the ground and it comes out for years and years with no cost, and you're selling it for 60 bucks a barrel. You think you're going to allow some upstart cowboy from Montana to come in here and screw up the biggest industry on planet Earth? I mean, come on, kids. If nothing else, somebody will go up there and shoot the governor. I mean, that's a guy that needs to be killed. Well, you know, if you're running ExxonMobil. Now, for you and me, the average Joe Sixpack citizen out here, that would really benefit from a national policy here in this country, in the United States, of energy independence. We're all for the governor. I watched him on 60 Minutes last night, and I'm sitting here saying, well, right on, partner. Now, I mentioned a little earlier, it isn't that Americans and Canadians and Australians and Europeans don't have solutions. We could solve the problem. But we're not going to solve the problem because we're engrossed in this anti-God, anti-Ten Commandments program. And our God is working against us. That's what the bottom line is. It's the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob that is working against us. And you see that in Leviticus chapter 26 and Deuteronomy chapter 28. Every solution that is brought forward is countered by some nitwit someplace who is in control of the monetary system, which makes the world go round. Now, let me give you an illustration. Here's this nice lady on 60 Minutes last night, and she says what we need to produce is biodiesel. Now, the oil industry does not want to produce biodiesel, and they don't want to produce gasified coal. They want to produce oil, and they want to produce it at $60 a barrel, and I don't blame them. My God, if I was in the oil business, I would want oil at $160 a barrel. You know, business is business. But they have created a monopoly, and this monopoly is controlled by the people that produce our money. That's the Federal Reserve. Now, you take the combination of the Federal Reserve, which produces our money, and the major multinational corporations like ExxonMobil and Shell Oil, etc., and you put those forces together. And every time somebody comes up with a solution to our problem, which almost inevitably goes back to, you know, maybe we should practice the Ten Commandments. We complain about juvenile delinquency. We complain about immorality. And the entire Arab world is anti-American, not because they don't like Americans because of your skin color or something. They don't like Americans because of your filthy, perverted morals. They just absolutely despise us. And I don't blame them. Can't blame them a bit. You know, Americans used to be pretty clean, straightforward people. Today, we're no longer straightforward. We're devious. And we're crooked. And we're stealing people's oil. That's the purpose for the Iraqi war over there. It's to steal their oil. Nobody gives a rat's ass about their politics or about their democracy. If we were concerned about the health, safety, and welfare of the people of the world, we would be in North Korea freeing them from a tyrant. We would be in Cuba freeing them from a tyrant. There's no oil in Cuba, and there's no oil in North Korea. And that's where reality's at. So when somebody comes along and proposes a solution to a problem, which in 1910... somebody came along and said, let's build a great big dam up in the Sierras. Let's flood a valley up there that nobody's ever seen, and nobody even knows is there, and nobody's going to miss. and let's produce water up there, gravity-fed, and supply the entire city of San Francisco and probably two or three more cities along the way, the size of San Francisco, with water, free water. And we did that, and we solved that problem. And today, what do we hear? Let's destroy the dam and let's tear it down. It's almost as if we Americans have a death wish, that we want to destroy our infrastructure. I want to ask you, what in the hell are you going to replace it with? And the environmentalists say, well, you know, we could drill wells and we can get water from other places. Okay, let's suppose you get the water from other places. Well, then doesn't the water that you take from other places take the water from where it is to divert it to somewhere else that you've already got water for? I mean, my God, you're sitting on the Titanic and the damn thing is flooding and somebody says, let's bore some more holes in the side of the ship. Maybe the water will run out. If the water's running in on the starboard side, let's go over to the port side and drill holes and see if the water runs out. I mean, have we taken leave of our senses here in this country? And I want to point out for you Australians down there that when America collapses, you Australians are toast. Just look up the beach a couple hundred miles to China. Now, you went through this in World War II, you Australians. There's only about 30 million of you down there. About the same number of people as live in California. And the Japanese, remember in World War II, they were island hopping, headed south. Where did you think they were going? To Antarctica? You think they were going down there to colonize the Antarctic continent? They were going to Australia, boys and girls. The thing that keeps the Chinese and the Japanese out of Australia is America's nuclear umbrella. It's your big brother over here in the United States. Don't ever forget it. You Canadians up there, you know how long you guys are going to last when we collapse? You know, you Canadians up there, about 30 million of you, about the population of Australia, about the population of California. And both of you live in a piece of real estate about the size of China. And those Chinese are sitting over there with 1.3 billion people, and they're overcrowded, don't have enough of anything, and they need more space. Isn't that what the Japanese needed during World War II? Isn't that why they attacked Manchuria? Now, at the very same time that all of this is going on, these international geopolitical upheavals are going on all around the world, described so poignantly in Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21. Now we start to find that we've got weather upsets in the United States of America. And I want to point out to you, boys and girls, that it's the United States of America that is the shield for all of you Europeans. And America is being taken out of the equation. And before long, America is going to be out of the equation, and the nuclear umbrella is going to be taken off. That means that the Russians and the Chinese are going to have the predominant nuclear capacity on planet Earth. What do you think is going to happen, boys and girls, when the Chinese and the Russians have the nuclear capacity and America is out of the equation? What are you Australians going to do? Hey, what are you Canadians going to do? What about you Frenchmen over there? And you Belgians and you Dutchmen and you Danes and you Norwegians and Swedes? What do you think you're going to do? You're going to sit down, shut up, and do what the Russians tell you to do. That's what you're going to do. And out in the Far East, you Australians and New Zealanders and all the rest of you are going to sit down, shut up, and do what the Chinese tell you to do. And that includes you Japanese and Koreans, too. Now, that's what you have to look forward to in this thing called the New World Order. Now, I've brought this to your attention a time or two. Now, let me do like Governor Schweitzer. Let me tell you what the solution to our problem is. When we Americans obeyed more of, not all of, but more of the Ten Commandments and the laws of God, we had things a lot better. We had less drought. We had less floods. We had more valuable money. We had less social upheaval. We had a smaller national debt. We had less personal and private debt. We had more national production and manufacturing jobs. We had better employment and more of it. And we were outsourcing fewer jobs. We were more self-sufficient in oil. And we did better in every category when we were obeying God and keeping His commandments. That's why I want to bring it to your attention. Not that it's going to change a whole lot. But, I mean, change a whole lot nationally. But there's a whole lot that we can change at the local level in our own families. Now, I don't suspect that the entire nation is going to change, but if the nation doesn't change and this drought continues on, you're going to need some seeds. And I want to bring to your attention the Fedco Seed Company. Remember, they're up in Waterville, Maine. Jot this down. It may make the difference between living and dying for you. May. I don't say it will, just may. There's only two or three companies that I know of that are still producing and are committed to open pollinated seeds. The rest of them are all going down the GMO road. And the GMO, genetically modified organisms, are the kiss of death. And it's coming to a town near you. Fedco Seeds, get their catalog. P.O. Box 520, Waterville, Maine. That's M.E., Waterville, Maine, 04903. They got a phone up there, too. The phone number is 207-873-7333. Again, that's area code 207-873-7333. Give you a little plug here for the Fedco Seed Company. Now, there's another guy I want to give you a plug for. It's a guy that produces Ten Commandments signs. I say a guy. I don't know if he's a guy or a woman or what. They've got a website. It's called TenCommandments.faithweb.com. Ten Commandments. You can probably remember that. www.TenCommandments.faithweb.com. They got a phone number, too. It's 888-601-2345. I don't know how they got that 2345 number, but it's 888-601-2345. You should have a sign on your gate and on your doorpost that says the Ten Commandments, and they should be listed because God Himself gave us two statutes and He said, this is what I want you to do. It isn't a big law. It isn't any great big deal. And the signs are cheap. They're on plastic. They're pretty heavy-duty signs. Now, I've had mine on my gate now for more than a year. And it's plastic and the sun shines on it. Now, I've had to replace it. About every two or three years, you'll have to replace that sign. Well, Halbert hit it with the baling machine and tore it off the gates, what really happened to it. But it was kind of weak anyway because the sun shines on it and they get kind of weak and then you touch them and they fall apart. So don't forget to get your Ten Commandments sign and put it on your gate. Might make the difference between living or dying at some time in the future. Hey, we'll be back with more next time on what is this drought going on in America. I'm out of time. We'll have to leave it right there. You've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, we're out of time. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.